Last week marked the 15th anniversary of the Night of Shock and Awe, exploding across the night sky over Baghdad, the opening salvo in a nearly 9-year war. It was a deadly conflict to cover. Foreign reporters increasingly relied on Iraqis to take the risks on the ground. Back in 2006, I spoke to three Iraqis pulled into journalism by a trick of fate, caught in the wave of correspondence pouring in from the West. Then I spoke to them again in 2013. We'll replay both of those. The story begins with writer George Packer, who, while covering Iraq for The New Yorker, found a blog called Healing Iraq.
Well, the first time you go to his blog, it says something like, "Views of an Iraqi dentist." And then there's a quote, I believe, from Swift. So you're just thinking an Iraqi dentist whose epigraph on his blog is from Jonathan Swift, and who is writing these long, informed, historical accounts of what's going on in Iraq today. Who is this guy? Where did he learn all this? You know, why is he writing this? Is he real?
It is useless to attempt to reason a man out of what he was never reasoned into. That's the epigraph from Swift that sits atop Healing Iraq.
I thought he was maybe 50, not a guy in his mid to late 20s, because he seemed so reflective and sort of sad and slightly disdainful about the militias and about the violence and about Iraqi politicians and about American mistakes. But there was no hysteria and there was no rank partisanship. He somehow seemed to take the whole thing in and see it as the tragedy that it was and is.
I thought that in the early days of the war, the Western media was just pouring into Iraq and they were confused about everything and they were just missing a local perspective.
Ziad, he prefers to leave off his last name, writes Healing Iraq.
There were many misconceptions in the Western press, too many to count. So I just tried to do one at a time and that I thought that would be my mission. I was probably one of the few people who actually supported the war, at least in my community in Baghdad. I wanted to convey that sense and that support.
Ziad is now studying journalism at the City University of New York, reporting on local stories in Brooklyn. On Monday, he posted this on Healing Iraq.
Another close friend of mine has been killed in Baghdad. We had lunch together in Baghdad just days before I left. I can't concentrate on anything anymore. I should not be here in New York, running around a stupid neighborhood asking people about their issues. I now officially regret supporting this war back in 2003. The guilt is too much for me to handle.
Do you feel like you've marooned yourself onto a desert island or something?
Yes, sometimes I have that feeling. I get depressed many times and think, what am I doing here? I mean, I should be back with my family. I mean, if they're in danger, at least I should be in danger with them. I can't be safe here while they're suffering over there. I'm also willing to learn. That's what I came here for. That's at least what I tell myself.
Ziad doesn't see himself as a newspaper or TV reporter. He doesn't want to work for a Western news agency. He's not even ready to renounce dentistry. But for now, he says he needs to reach out to the West his way.
Maybe my focus on online journalism is kind of my way out of this. not to be immersed too much in the risk and at the same time doing my best to get out the story. I mean, that's what I can do. I mean, I can't be like any of those brave Iraqi springers who went to Fallujah and embedded with insurgents. And I could never do that.
Ali Fadil does that, a doctor who ran afoul of Saddam's regime when he bought a color laser printer without permission. He fled and was practicing medicine in Yemen. When Baghdad fell, he returned.
To participate in building my country. And I thought, we have now a new Iraq. We'll have the best Iraq ever in the world. I have to be there from the beginning.
But in the Baghdad hospital where he worked, the equipment didn't work. The security was non-existent.
And worse than that, politics was coming into the hospitals. It was coming into the Minister of Health. You can see everything is being taken from you and like you're an alien in your country. At that time, I was approached by the media, by the Financial Times. I thought, okay, I couldn't do anything as a doctor. Probably I can do something as a journalist.
Did it ever occur to you before this point that this might be a profession you'd want to be in? journalism?
No, not at all. No, never.
In reporter speak, a fixer is a translator, navigator, and person finder for a journalist on unfamiliar ground. But in Iraq, where the streets are perilous, the fixer often is the unsung reporter who asks the questions and brings the answers back to his journalist boss. A great fixer can even save your life. One reporter described Ali Fadil as a rock star among fixers, smuggling one Western reporter under a blanket in a free fire zone, clearing the path for another who wanted to speak with some angry young man with guns. Now, Ali works as a freelancer, because working with Western reporters is more likely to get you killed. But even alone, it's still likely. George Packer.
They're targeted by the Sunni insurgents. If they write bad things about the Shiite militias, they're targeted by them. They often run afoul of the American military at checkpoints or simply by being in Baghdad and being Iraqi. And now more and more, the Iraqi government is their main enemy because it's clamping down on them, it's throwing them in jail, it's beating them up, it's keeping them from the news.
Last month, Ali Fadil wrote a piece in the New York Times praising the efforts of the Coalition Provisional Authority to establish a free press in Iraq.
Ali wrote that it would be very ironic if the Americans, having sort of fathered this democratic process and created an independent Iraqi press, watched while it turned into yet another state-controlled press corps like in every neighboring country. I would say, though, that unlike the Iraqi police and army, the young Iraqi journalists I know are real professionals and are quickly achieving sort of international standards of excellence and are winning awards and are keeping the world informed and are getting killed for it.
So I put it to Ali, currently studying journalism at New York University. This is a really dangerous job. You have a wife and two kids. How come you want to do it?
I want to correct this. I have an angry wife and two kids. She's very angry about my job. She hates that I'm doing this job. The reason why I like journalism, the reason why I thought that the risk you take while doing a story is worth it, is because I saw Western journalists throwing themselves in these remote areas of Iraq. I've never dreamed of going to these areas, and I think it's too dangerous just to be there as a human being, but they just go for the sake of the story. I worship this thing in journalism, and that's the way how it goes, and I think that's the way I'm going to take it. It's my country at the end, and I have access to many places in Iraq Westerners don't have.
Unlike Ali, Ayub Nouri did not become a journalist by accident. Born in the Kurdish town of Halabja, notoriously gassed by Saddam, he was a teenager when he met his first Western journalists, a British TV crew, who hired him as a translator. He was already an experienced reporter at the age of 24 when Elizabeth Rubin, filing for the New Republic just before the war, hired him as a fixer for a trip to an Arab part of Kurdistan.
And the Kurds were telling us, don't go, you're going to be killed. And Ayub basically said to me, though he is a Kurd, he said, don't trust these guys. They've been looting every single Arab village and they don't want us to see it. And so we went to this village and in fact there was a fight going on between the Kurds and the Arabs of this village because the Kurds were trying to steal all the petrol at this gas station. And in fact, that's exactly what they hadn't wanted us to see. And so we went and were with this Arab family, found out everything that was going on. And people trusted him because they saw that he was also not playing on any tribal card. You know, he was looking for the truth.
Everything goes back to not being free.
Ayub Nouri never believed he could be a journalist in Iraq because the media weren't free. But he always knew how it could sound because it poured out of his father's radio.
He was listening to the Persian and Arabic service of the BBC when I was a child, every morning, every night. And then I bought my own radio and listened to the BBC all day long. And I think that's how I learned my English, from listening to the BBC. I was jealous of the reporters when they were reading their sign off saying so-and-so from Kuala Lumpur, for example. That was my only dream, one day to be a reporter and say that.
For the world, I am Ayub Nouri, Baghdad.
We're talking to Ayub Nouri, who reports for the BBC. He's been telling me
for the world, this is Ayub Nouri, Kut, southern Iraq.
Ayub is also in New York at the moment, studying at Columbia Journalism School. But like Ziad, like Ali, Ayub is planning to head back. As the death toll mounts and the despair deepens in Iraq, these and many other Iraqi journalists are ready to stand up, even as Western journalists are forced to stand down. That piece was recorded 7 years ago. After finishing his studies here, Kurdish journalist Ayub Nouri returned to Iraq and traveled across the region for a wide variety of outlets. Now he's the managing editor for a news website called Rudaw.net.
Our main focus of coverage is the four parts of Kurdistan: Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and Syria.
And where are you based?
I am most of the time based in Toronto, Canada.
How come?
Because this is a far away and quiet and peaceful place.
Do you feel like you've retired?
Yes, I feel like I've retired at the age of, I'm now 34, but I was 30 years old when I came here. Yes, I mean, 1 year in Iraq is equal to 5 years in another country. I love nature and I love big countries. I came here in the hope of slowly exploring this country and seeing the beautiful nature. Besides, it's a much more peaceful country than many places I've visited, including the U.S.
So you don't miss being in the heart of the action?
I actually do, but Iraq is still dangerous and you could lose your life at any moment. Today, this morning, before you called, I was listening to the radio and there have been a series of bombings in Baghdad. I realized I had done my part of covering the war in Iraq. But I still miss being there and be in touch with people and write, because stories are still coming out. Every time you sit down with someone on a bus or in a tea shop, anywhere in Iraq, you would hear many stories that they haven't told anyone. I miss that part.
Ayub, thank you very much.
You are welcome. Thank you for calling me.
Ayub Nouri is the managing editor for Rudaw.net, and he lives in Toronto. We found Ziad Kasim, the young Iraqi dentist who blogged for Healing Iraq, in San Antonio. When we spoke to him back in 2006, he was studying journalism at the City University of New York, and he was deeply conflicted.
I was very worried about my family because they were still all in Baghdad, and I was the only one who had left. And here I was reporting about noise pollution and stuff like that, and it didn't seem right to me. I don't know. I was still consumed with worry all the time until my family safely left, and that was when I could finally breathe.
When I last spoke to you, mm-hmm. you were writing Healing Iraq, still wanting to be a dentist.
Well, I'm still working to be a dentist. I already took the qualifying exam, and I'm waiting for the state to take the second exam. In a couple of years, I should be ready to go. But it's not that I want to do dentistry, it's just that my family arrived here and they're having problems adjusting to life here. So I feel I have a responsibility to support them, and journalism just didn't do that for me.
You're still doing Healing Iraq?
Yeah, on and off. I try to keep it alive.
You know, I started my piece with the epigraph from yeah. Healing Iraq, that quote from Jonathan Swift, that says, "It is useless to attempt to reason a man out of what he was never reasoned into." That's almost an argument against communicating at all.
I did a lot of posts about religion. I thought that the conflict had some side of it that was really connected to religion and sectarianism. It was just my general view of how people thought about it. They were just raised that way, and it was really hard for them to give it up. And that's what we're seeing right now in Iraq. People have forgotten the worst years of 2006 and 2007, and there's a return of sectarian killings and assassinations.
But do you believe that you can reason people out of it?
Well, we try that all the time. It's just, at some point, you really give up.
Zayad, thanks a lot.
No problem at all.
Zayad Qasim blogs still at Healing Iraq. When Ali Fadil, the doctor-turned-rock-star fixer, finished his studies at NYU, he had the very American experience of not finding a job, partly because of the economic crash and partly because his usual clients had less interest in the war. So he applied for political asylum in the U.S. Anyway, he says journalism died in Iraq after the American forces left. The authorities bear down hard on reporters there.
It could be the security, the police, the army. Friends of mine who are still there quit journalism because it's becoming really dangerous. And not only dangerous, it's useless because you can't really move around and do what you want to do as we're used to before, when the streets were, you know, not controlled by anybody.
What you're saying is that you preferred, as a journalist, the chaos in the street.
No, absolutely not. I'd rather have the country stabilized, but this is not stabilization. When you get the country back to point zero, you know, to square one after all the bloodshed, it's very important to keep democracy alive if it was really meant to be.
And that's not what you see.
No, that's not what I see. Unfortunately, Iraq is not a country with democracy right now. The street is not really as peaceful as it looks. Basic life services are still not available. I remember a lot of these press conferences in the Green Zone, they were saying, oh, we'll come and see Iraq after 10 years, it'll be different. And you can see that things are not really different. There's lots of money there, that's true, but there's no life.
Any regrets?
Regrets about my ventures into the media? No, absolutely not. It's actually where one of the best years of my life. And I look forward to relive that experience, maybe not in Iraq, maybe somewhere else.
Have you become more skeptical of the power of journalism to change things?
I'm really convinced that journalism is a very powerful tool. It's a dangerous tool at the same time. That's why I'm frustrated that it's in the hands of the Iraqi government right now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ali, how do you want to be identified?
As Ali Fadil, the journalist.
A journalist.
Uh-huh.
Ali Fadil, Iraqi journalist and medical resident, now living in Atlanta. Today, Ali Fadil, having finished his studies, is a doctor working in a small town outside Atlanta. Ayub Nouri is still living in Canada and editing Rudow.net. We couldn't track down Zayad Qasim before we had to record, but when we do, we'll be sure to add it to the webpage for this podcast. On the big show this week, posted Friday, we'll be revisiting the coverage of Iraq with reporters who were there. We'll talk to political analysts on its enduring impact here. And we'll hear from an Iraqi-American about the human cost of the conflict.